Good morning. It's good to be here once more with you, and always thankful for the Lord's blessing and privilege of being able to meet with you once more. This morning, I want to turn to the book of 1 Samuel. And this morning, let's do a Bible story this morning. How about that? We got a lot of kids from zero up to 100. So let's do a Bible story. And this is a story, but it's a true account. And so I'm going to do something that you're not supposed to do when you read a book or a story. We're going to go to the end first, and then we're going to back up and we're going to lead up to it. So, 7th chapter of 1 Samuel. The 12th verse says, "Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shin, and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." So that's the last verse we're going to be leading up to this morning. But we're going to back up and get the account that leads to this point. It's also, another reason I wanted to do it is because we get the name Ebenezer here, which is going to be referenced at the beginning of what we're looking at. And so it helps us kind of orient ourselves to where we are. So this is the location between Mizpah and Shin that a stone was set up, and the name of the stone is Ebenezer. The Lord has helped us. Okay, now we're going to back up to the 4th chapter. And here in 1 Samuel, this was still in the time of the judges. They had not yet started having kings. This is in the time of the judges, and this is, as the name implies, this is starting with the account of Samuel in that first chapter. And just as a reminder, we have Samuel and his mother Hannah can't have a child and very distraught. And then the Lord blesses her. She has Samuel. She gives Samuel to the Lord in the temple. And in the temple, we have the high priest Eli, and we have his sons Hophni and Phinehas. And the sons are kind of rough. They're doing some kind of rough things, and not really the best examples. So things are in a bad state in Israel, and even the temple is not following the Lord as they ought. And as you see, as you go through Judges, and you go through Samuel and go on and on, you see these hills and valleys of the Israelites where they are doing good and then they do bad and they do good and do bad. And when they're doing bad, the Lord punishes. He judges them with some harsh reality checks. And so here in this first chapter, it begins and says, "Now the word of Samuel came to Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer. And the Philistines pitched in Aphek." So, the location here is beside Ebenezer, but at the time period, it had not yet been called Ebenezer. It's just for the people that would have been reading it, they know where it's talking about. But it's the same area we can see that we're leading up to in the 7th chapter. It's in the same location. And so they have the Philistines, that old enemy, the Philistines, that they've battled time and time again, are coming up against Israel. The Philistines put themselves in array against Israel, and when they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. Can you imagine this single battle that rages between the Israelites and the Philistines, and 4,000 Israelites are lost there in the battle against the Philistines? That's a major defeat that we see that happens there in Ebenezer. But it continues on. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. When people were coming to the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines? Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies. And this is something that's happened before. They've been in battles before where they've had the Ark of the Covenant, and it's led in front of the people, and then there was a battle that raged, and they defeated their enemy because that Ark of the Covenant, where the presence of the Lord came down on the mercy seat, and that beautiful picture we have. But the problem is, who told them to do this? Was it the Lord? No, they just did it. They just took it on their own accord to do it without the Lord telling them to. It's going to get them in more trouble. And I'll tell you, an interesting study is if you want to trace the path of the Ark, because it goes all over the place. And here it's in Shiloh, but it's going to be taken into to near Ebenezer and Aphek, where this battle is. People, it says, the people, when they saw it, they're going to be cheering. But first, people sent to Shiloh that they bring from thence the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, which dwelt between the cherubims, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. So that Hophni and Phinehas, I referenced them for a reason, because now they're coming into play, because who is going to kind of be the ones to help bring it out to them? It's these two sons of the high priest Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, that are going to do it. Not what the Lord said to do, not the instruction he gave, but they're going to do it anyway. So, fifth verse says, when the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord came to the camp, all Israel shouted with great joy so that the earth rang again. They're excited because what they think is happening is the Lord is there, he's present, and the enemy is going to be trampled underfoot. The Philistines, they heard the noise. Said, what meaneth the noise of the great shout in the camp of the Hebrews? And they understood that the Ark of the Lord was coming to the camp, and the Philistines were afraid. They'd seen and heard of what the Lord had done to enemies when he was there. They knew what happened in Egypt. They knew the stories of Joshua and the battles that were won. They knew those things. So they were afraid. They just defeated 4,000. But Israel is joyous. Philistines are afraid. And the Philistines said, God has come unto the camp. And they said, woe unto us, for there hath none not been such a thing heretofore. Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of this mighty God. These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines. Sometimes that's quoted as being something that an Israelite or God people had said. It was Philistines that said it here. Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines, that ye be not servants unto the Hebrews. So, big defeat. Ark's there. Israel's happy. Philistines are afraid. But God did not instruct it. Did not command for it to happen. So in the 10th verse, the Philistines fought and Israel was smitten. And they fled every man to his tent, and there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. That 4,000 defeat was bad. It got worse. 30,000 died. So between these two battles here, near Ebenezer, 34,000 Israelites were slaughtered. And it gets worse. The Ark of God was taken. The two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. They lost the Ark. Two priests were killed. 34,000 died. So they were not listening to God. This is a major blow to Israel. and it got worse. There ran a man of Benjamin out of the army, came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes rent, with earth upon his head. When he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And the man came into the city and told it. All the city cried out. And this is not that cry of joy anymore. It's a cry of groaning, of grief, of mourning for what had happened. And when Eli heard the noise of the crying, and he said, what meaneth the noise of the of this tumult? And the man came in hastily and told Eli. Eli was 98 years old, and his eyes were dim that he could not see. The man said unto Eli, I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army. And he said, what is there done, my son? And the messenger answered and said, Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there hath been a great slaughter among the people, and thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God is taken. That's some bad news to give to Eli, isn't it? That's just one thing after another. And it came to pass when he had made mention of the ark of God, not the sons, but the ark of God, he fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died, for he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. So he was an overweight man who, sitting there, heard what had happened, fell back, broke his neck. In this day, these couple of days, 34,000 died. They lost the ark. They lost two priests and the high priest, all in that short period of time. That's a bad time. That's a bad day. And now, the Philistines have the ark. This symbol of the presence of God, and not more, much more than a symbol, it's actually where God came between the cherubims. This inside, you had those things, the pot of manna, Aaron's rod that budded, the Ten Commandments that were given there on the tablets of stone, there within the ark, and it's gone. The law, the picture of God's presence, gone. Priest dead, a slaughter among the people. Philistines were probably feeling pretty good about themselves. Israel is pretty low. Well, now in our account, we're going to see one more thing that happened with Israel, and then we'll turn our attention. You know, if you're watching a movie and you have something with this group of people, and then it goes to a different group, well, we're going to turn our attention to the Philistines in a moment. But we're not done with Israel yet. His daughter-in-law. So this is Eli's daughter-in-law. Phinehas' wife was with child, near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken, and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women that stood by her said unto her, fear not, for thou hast borne a son. And she answered not, neither did she regard it. So she is dying in childbirth now. And she named the child Ichabod, saying, the glory is departed from Israel because the ark of God was taken, because of her father-in-law and her husband. Glory has departed, Ichabod. And she said, the glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken. So we have at the beginning of our account, Ichabod. Glory is departed. That fourth chapter is kind of rough for Israel. Again, hills and valleys. This is about rough times. Now we're going to turn our attention to the Philistines. Now they must be feeling pretty good. What's going to happen with them? Well, the Philistines, they have the ark, and they're going to bring it from Ebenezer unto Ashdod. So it's going Shiloh, Ebenezer, Ashdod. This is the journey so far of the ark. Now Ashdod is where the Philistines dwell. This is where their idolatry was at its height here in Ashdod. They took the ark of God and they brought it into the house of Dagon and set it by Dagon. Dagon was one of their pagan gods. So with the polytheistic, and this is with the Philistines, we later see it with the Greeks and the Romans, and we see it even to this day, you see the polytheism where they wouldn't just have, as the Israelites had, they have the tabernacle and then the temple. That was for the one true God. Well, these different religions of polytheism, they would have different houses or temples for all their different gods. And you still, if you were to go to Athens or you were to go to Rome, you see the remnants of all these different houses of Aphrodite and the house of Ares and all these different these pagan gods' houses. So this was Dagon, one of their pagan gods. And they're bringing that ark into this pagan house of worship. That is an abomination to God. It is not quite the abomination that maketh desolate that is referred to. That is bringing the idolatry into the temple of God. But this is bringing something that is represented, a picture of strength for Israel, into a pagan house of worship. And so it's mockery. They're mocking God. They're mocking Israel. They're trying to flex their muscles and bring it into the house of Dagon. And when they of Ashdod arose early in the morning, behold, Dagon was fallen upon his face to the earth before the ark. So something happened. Statue fell. It happens, you know, things fall. But it fell. Little side note, you know, no big deal, right? So they took him and they set him up. Okay? Well, the next morning, Dagon fell down again. This time, palms of his hands were cut off, and only the stump of Dagon was left, the head and the palms of the head. So his hands and his head were cut off and he had fallen on his face. Well, that ain't an accident, is it? So they decide, well, maybe we don't keep him near Dagon anymore. And so it says in the fifth verse, therefore neither the priest of Dagon nor any that come into Dagon's house tread on the threshold of Dagon and Ashdod. We're going to stay back. It happened to the statue. We don't want it to happen to us. So we've turned our attention to the Philistines, and now they're going to start having some bad days. And it's starting off with this statue being destroyed. Just out of nowhere, seemingly supernatural, that it's destroyed. The sixth verse says, but the hand of the Lord was heavy upon them of Ashdod. And he destroyed them and smote them with emrods, even Ashdod and the coast thereof. So statue fell, now they're dying and they're having emrods. Now, I've heard this described as tumors, and I've heard it described as what you might think it is. Either way, they're being struck with something they didn't want to have. So they're getting killed, and then they're being struck with pain. So when the men of Ashdod saw that, it was so, they said, the ark of God of Israel shall not abide with us, for his hand is sore upon us, and upon Dagon, our God. They sent therefore and gathered all the lords of the Philistines unto them and said, what shall we do with the ark, God of Israel? They answered, let the ark of God of Israel be carried about unto Gath. And they carried the ark of the God of Israel about thither. Shiloh, Ebenezer, Ashdod, and now in Ashdod they're like, send it away. So it goes to Gath. It's just making its trip around doing a little tour of Philistine. And it was so that after they had carried it about, the hand of the Lord was against the city with very great destruction. And he spoke the men of the city, both small and great, and they had Imrods in their secret parts. That's why I don't think it was a tumor. Ashdod, we don't like it. Get it away. Gath, same thing happens to them. The Philistines are now having a bad time.
Yeah.
So, therefore, they sent the Ark of God to Ekron. It's just bouncing around, going from place to place. Nobody wants it. So it's going to go to Ekron now. So it came to pass, as the Ark of God came to Ekron, that the Ekronites cried out, saying, "They have brought about the Ark of God of Israel to us to slay us and our people." They have learned now. We know what happened in Ashdod. We know what happened in Gath. What are you doing this to us for? We don't want it. They brought it so it will slay us. So they sent and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines and said, "Send away the Ark of the God of Israel. And let it go again to his own place, that it slay us not and our people. For there was deadly destruction throughout all the city. The hand of God was very heavy there. And the men that died not were smitten with Imrods, and the cry of the city went up to the heaven." It happened to Ekron then. The same thing. You see the difference here? That fourth chapter, the Israelites were going to be like, "This is our plan. This is what we're going to do. This is what's going to work." They were using the ark as a tool. They were using it as a knife to fight against the Philistines. God did not tell them to do it. They were trying to use it as a weapon, as a tool. And God punished them for it. And God was not with them. Next chapter. God didn't have any help from the Israelites. They didn't lift a finger here. And how many of the Philistines were slain? How many of them maybe wished that they were? God didn't need the Israelites here. He did it all on his own. We see a big difference. We need God. He doesn't need us, but he loves us. God is all powerful, and he is taking care of business himself without anyone else helping him. What he requires of us is obedience, is following him, is listening to him, is following his commands, not our own ideas of what is the best way to do things. So, making our trip around the different cities of the Philistines, they're ready to get it going. Well, we get to the sixth chapter. It says, "The ark of the Lord was in the country of the Philistines 7 months." That's a tour that they didn't enjoy. And so they called the priests and the diviners, saying, "What shall we do to the ark of the Lord?" Now, I wonder about that too. Because I've read through that quickly and read it with, until I slow down and said, "What shall we do to the ark of the Lord?" Now, they might would have loved to destroy it, but I think they knew that they couldn't. But what could we do to it to appease God, to make him satisfied, to make him stop? What do we do to the ark of the Lord? "Tell us wherewith we shall send it to his place." And they said, if you send away the ark of the God of Israel, send it not empty. But in any wise return him a trespass offering, that ye shall be healed, and it shall be known to you why his hand is not removed from you. So make an offering to this God. Now you got to wonder what's in their mind. They were already afraid. They knew what this God, or as they said, gods of Israel did to the Egyptians with the plagues. And now they've experienced firsthand. And their God, their powerful God that should be there to protect them, was just flat on his face with his head and his hands cut off. Couldn't do a thing. So what offering do we need to make so he will heal us and we can be done with this? And then you'll see the strangest offering that you might see in the Bible. They said, what shall be the trespass offering which we shall return to him? They answered, 5 golden emrods. Yeah, that's right. 5 golden emrods and 5 golden mice, according to the number of the lords of the Philistines, for one plague was on you all and on your lord. Some interesting little sculptures that are going to be put in there and sent to appease God. So, it continues, wherefore shall ye make images of your emrods and images of the mice that mar the land? And ye shall give glory unto God of Israel. Peradventure he will lighten his hand from off you, from off your gods, and from off your land. I have a feeling here that there is a lot more that was happening in these cities than what we're given. We're given that they were smitten and struck with emrods, but it has reference to mice. I think there's probably mice, maybe disease, plague, who knows, going through the city. There's reference to the gods and to the land. I believe that we're only given a small picture of the destruction that really fell on those cities. God meant business, and there was a very great destruction on the cities. So they're going to use these trespass offerings, send it back, so that maybe you'll appease them. But then they got to thinking, well, do we really know this was from God of Israel? Or maybe there's something else that was going on. Maybe we just have a string of bad luck. So they're going to try it. They're going to do a little test to see if, okay, maybe this is God of Israel, maybe it's not. So down in the 7th verse, it says, now therefore make a new cart and take 2 milch kine on which there hath come no yoke, and tie the kine to the cart and bring their calves home from them. So these are going to take some milk cows that have never been yoked. Now, why is that important? Well, let's read down the next part, and then we'll come back. And take the cart of the Lord and lay it upon the ark of the Lord, and lay it upon the cart, and put the jewels of gold which ye return him from a trespass offering in a coffer by the side thereof, and send it away that it may go. And see, here's the test. See if it goeth up by the way of his own coast to Beth Shemesh, then he hath done us this great evil. So send it, if it's going by God's coast, the coast of Beth Shemesh, then this is a sign that it was this God of Israel that did it. And if not, then we shall know that it is not his hand that smote us. It was a chance that happened to us. It was bad luck. Why is it important that those cows had never been yoked before? Because they'd never had the experience of being guided anyway. If you have one that has been yoked repeatedly and is used to doing the same thing every time, well then if they yoke it and it does that same thing, what is it telling you? It's not telling you anything. So they want one that has never been yoked. It has never been guided in that way, So they're going to yoke it, and they're going to put the ark on this new cart, not one that's ever been used for any other circumstance, with these milk cows, and see if it goes the coast of Beth Shemesh. That's our sign. It was God of Israel. If not, we've had a string of really bad luck lately. That's the test. So the men did so and took two milch kine and tied them to the cart and shut up their calves at home and laid the ark of the Lord upon the cart and the coffer with the mice of gold and with the images of their emrods. And the kine took the straight way to the way of Beth Shemesh and went along the highway, lowing as they went and turning not aside to the right hand or to the left. So what happened? They yoked those cows, they had them pulling that cart, and they went straight to Beth Shemesh. They didn't even act like they were going to take a detour. They didn't lift up their heads and even look at the trees. They went straight, didn't go left or right, stayed on that path the entire way. Now what a sign for them, huh? They just went straight to Beth Shemesh. And the lords of the Philistines went after them into the border of Beth Shemesh, and they of Beth Shemesh were reaping their wheat harvest in the valley, and they lifted up their eyes and saw the ark and rejoiced to see it. So it had been almost a year since it was taken. Almost a year since 34,000 died, since Hophni and Phinehas died, since Eli died, since his daughter-in-law died in childbirth, and the ark was taken. And then, here it comes. Here it's coming down the highway, and there's a big cheer. The ark came into the field of Joshua, of Beth Shemite, and he stood there, and where there was a great stone, and they claimed the wood of the cart, and offered the kine a burnt offering. Like holding on to that wood, they take those cows, they offer them as an offering to God. Thank you, the ark is back. All is well now. Or not. The Levites took down the ark and the coffer that was with it, wherein the jewels of gold were, and put them on a great stone. And the men of Beth Shemesh offered burnt offerings and sacrifices the same day unto the Lord. That's all well and good. And the five lords of the Philistines had seen it, they returned to Ekron the same day. Probably quickly. We're happy to be done with it. They're going back. Now the Israelites have it. And these are the golden emrods which the Philistines returned for trespass offering. For Ashdod one, for Gaza one, for Ascalon one, for Gath one, for Ekron one. So we got two extra cities that are thrown in there. It makes me wonder about those. Now there were the lords of the Philistines, five lords, so one representing each city, but I wonder if those other two cities were also struck. The golden mice, according to the number of all the cities of the Philistines belonging to the five lords, both the fenced cities and the country villages, even unto the great stone of Abel, wherein they set down the ark of the Lord, which stone remaineth unto this day in the field of Joshua, the Beth Shemite. And then we get into the next verse, which seems very odd. And he smote the men of Beth Shemesh. Those men that were very happy, that were excited. And he smote them. Why? Because they had looked into the ark of the Lord. How did they know five golden mice, five golden emrods? Because they opened it up and looked in. You know what they're not allowed to do? Touch it. The Ark of the Covenant, if you go back and you read the construction of it, it's very detailed. It's the gopher wood that is used, overlaid with gold. It talks about, very detailed, about the mercy seat, the same dimensions as the Ark itself. But then it talks about these golden rings that are around in these staves of wood that are put through the rings. And the purpose of those is because the ark is borne. It's carried You don't grab the ring and carry it. You grab the stave and you bear it upon your shoulders. You don't put it upon a cart to carry it. That lesson was also learned by the Israelites. You bear it. You wear it. You do not touch it. Not only did they touch it, they opened it up. That is a violation of the law. You cannot do that. And they did. So God punished them because you cannot do that. Even he smote of the people 50,310 men. You thought 34,000 was bad. We're getting a combined total of close to 100,000 people within a year's time, all because they were not listening to God. And so there is more than were killed by the Philistines were smote dead because they did not do what God's word said. You cannot touch the ark. You definitely cannot open it. But they did. And the people lamented because the Lord had smitten many people with a great slaughter. And the men of Beth Shemesh said, "Who is able to stand before this holy Lord God, and to whom shall he go up?" They sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kirjath-Jearim, saying, "The Philistines have brought again the ark of the Lord. Come ye down and fetch it up to you." They don't want it around them anymore either. It's continuing its journey. And now it's going to go from Beth Shemesh to Kirjath-Jearim. So fourth chapter was pretty bad for the Israelites. Fifth chapter was bad for the Philistines. The sixth chapter was bad for both of them. And now we're coming back around to that seventh chapter. We're getting close to where we started at the end. The men of Kirjath-Jearim came and fetched up the ark of the Lord and brought it to the house of Abinadab in the hill and sanctified Eleazar his son to keep the ark of the Lord. And it came to pass while the ark abode in Kirjath-Jearim that the time was long, for it was 20 years. And all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. So they bring it to Kirjath-Jearim, the house of Abinadab. Eleazar is watching over it, and it stays there for 20 years. Now, we ain't reading anything bad that's happening to Eleazar or Abinadab. They're keeping watch, and I believe they're doing what they need to do. And it's just sitting there for 20 years. And the people are lamenting for 20 years. We lost almost 100,000 people. And we have the ark, but we don't have the ark. It's not in the house of the Lord. It's hidden away somewhere because we're afraid of it. And it's sitting there. And then Samuel spake unto the people. He spake unto all the house of Israel. If you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. What were they doing in the meantime? Well, it tells us. They were serving other gods. They were serving Ashtaroth. They were doing pagan idolatry. He said, if you repent, if you stop doing what you're doing, follow the Lord, he will be with you. He will deliver you. The children of Israel did put away Baal and Ashtaroth and serve the Lord only. That's that. Hills and valleys. Get in a bad state. Punished. And eventually they repent. And what does God do? God delivers them. If you look at the judges throughout this period, you see something very different than the times of the kings. With kings, you had a king, and then you had someone that followed the king. King died, someone was lifted up to the king's place. Some did right in the eyes of God, some did wrong, did evil. Much more that did evil than did good. But there was always one that came next. The judges weren't that way. There wasn't a lineage of judges where one died and immediately there was another one. Judges were raised up at the time they were needed to deliver the people. That's how the judges worked. And so when things were going well, they didn't need the deliverance because God was with them. They were doing things well. But then they'd start going down a bad path, and a judge would be raised up. You'd have the Philistines, or you'd have the Moabites, or whoever it was come up against them, and God would raise up a judge. They turned from their idolatry, served God, and so he was going to be with them. And Samuel said, "Gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray for you unto the Lord." Where's Mizpah? Right beside Ebenezer. That first verse we read in the very beginning, between Mizpah and Shen, we have Ebenezer. So we're back to where we were in that fourth chapter. About 21 years later, in the same place. They gathered together to Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted that day and said, "There we have sinned against the Lord," and Samuel judged the children of Israel in Mizpah. They repented and offered the sacrifice. They're finally doing it right. And then, guess who is there? Their old friends that were there in Ebenezer 21 years ago. When the Philistines heard that the children of Israel gathered together in Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. And when the children of Israel heard it, they were afraid of the Philistines. Imagine, this is you. 21 years ago, you suffered a horrible slaughter. The Philistines came up against you. You lost 4,000. You thought it was bad. Then you lost 30,000. Now, all this time later, generation later, you're here in the same place. And here come the Philistines. History repeating itself. And they were afraid. Makes sense. Have you ever had something happen, and then you go back to the location where it happened, and you just get a sick feeling? Or you want to stay away from it? I remember when, about 20, me and my now wife were, it was the day before Easter, and we're just kind of riding around town, just, you know, going wherever. And we're going down this main street. 4 o'clock in the afternoon, a drunk driver pulls and hits us head on. Lord was with us. My truck was destroyed, but we just had some bumps and scratches. The other driver jumped in another car and took off. It was over a year before I drove on that road again. Because every time I was there, and we were fine. The Lord blessed us. We were okay. But every time I'd go near that road, I'd go back to that moment. And I avoided it for a long time because it brought back those memories. Yep. Have you ever had those places?
Yep.
Have you ever had those people, those phrases, those certain things that you think about, and they just bring up the bad memories, and you just want to avoid them because they're sore spots? 4,000 people died in a slaughter the same place you are standing, by the same people. And it was your family. It was the people that were there before you that lost their lives in that same place. And here they come again. They were afraid. The children of Israel said to Samuel, "Cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us, that he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines." What is the difference? 20 years ago, they said, "Grab that ark, we'll bring it in, and we'll take care of it." This time, said, "Continue to pray to God that he will be with us. Then he will deliver us." It was a hard lesson to learn, but they learned it. They learned it. Samuel took a sucking lamb and offered it for a burnt offering wholly unto the Lord. And Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. I tell you, those are four beautiful words. The Lord heard him. When you pray, the Lord hears you. In Revelation, we read about the prayers of the saints being sweet incense. The Lord hears you. If you're treading down that same path that was destruction before, and you cry out to the Lord hears you. The Lord heard him. And as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, I think I've talked about this before. You read in the Bible, the immediately, or as he was praying, here's another one. As he was offering. It wasn't he did it and then there was a delay. No, as it was happening, here come the Philistines. He's offering the offering and there you can see them coming in the distance. Philistines drew near to battle against Israel, and the Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomfited them, and they were smitten before Israel. He smote all those Philistines with disease, with plague, with all this other stuff. Here, there's a thundering. They're discomfited and they don't know what they're doing. Likely putting their swords against one another. The men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them until they came to Bethgar. A very different picture than what happened 20 years ago. And the biggest difference is the Lord was with them. They prayed to God and did the right thing. And he was with them. And then we're right back to the verse that we started with. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shen and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, "Hitherto hath the Lord helped us." That stone was not there so the Lord would help them. It was not put there so that the next time they come, the Lord would help them. Because the stone's there, it was there as a memorial. It was there as a reminder. So when the generations that come to Ebenezer and see a stone, that means the Lord helped us. Every time they see that stone, they remember the deliverance of God. When they were doing their own thing, their own way, it was destruction. But when they followed God and the Lord was with them, they were delivered. This Ebenezer stone. And there is a song, "Come Thou Fount." And in it, there's the line, "Here I raise my Ebenezer." A man named Robert Robinson wrote that song. And he went through some hills and valleys in his own life. He saw himself as a great sinner, that he was and that we all are. And he was delivered. Now later in his life, he had some rough times. But he was delivered from some confusion and from some rough times. And so he wrote that song. And had that line, "Here I raise my Ebenezer." Meaning that here I raise a memorial, remembering when God was with me. And that's something that I encourage us all to do. This Ebenezer stone was they were remembering when the Lord delivered them from the hand of the Philistines. In the moment of sure defeat, they had seen it before, and they were sore afraid the Lord delivered them. And they rose that Ebenezer stone so when they looked upon it, they would reflect and remember of when the Lord was with them. Robinson, when he wrote that, "Here I raise my Ebenezer," could look at the time and remember when the Lord was with him. I don't know what your Ebenezer stone is. I have several. I encourage you to raise your Ebenezer, to plant your Ebenezer stone of when the Lord delivered you, when the Lord provided for you, when the Lord was with you. Because there will come a day when you are in that same location, that same valley, and here come the Philistines again. Here they come to deal a great blow against you. And instead of being sore afraid, you can look at your Ebenezer and remember when the Lord was with you. When the Lord delivered you, provided for you. And instead of having fear, have comfort. He did it before, He can do it again. Raise that Ebenezer. The church is an Ebenezer. As a nation, we have been through a lot in our short history. Here the church stands. As God's people, the church has been persecuted since the beginning. You want some examples? Read Revelation. Read the letters to the churches. They went through some horrible things. Throughout the generations, there have been many that sought to kill God's people because they followed Him. And here the church stands. Stronger than ever. Because God's here. It's an Ebenezer. It's a memorial. It's a place that you can look to for comfort. Remember when you felt the Spirit in the house of the Lord. Remember when your brothers and sisters were there for you. Remember when God was there for you. Raise up those Ebenezers. So you don't have to be afraid. But you can trust in God. And trust that He will handle it. You don't have to try to drag out the ark yourself. He'll send those thunderings without you lifting a finger. Cry out. May the Lord bless you.